World Cup, World Cup. Every 4 years it's the World Cup, World Cup. If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, World Cup. It might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Cote d'Ivoire.
Ooh, Cote d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
The Guardian.
This is Music Weekly.
With The Guardian at Glastonbury.
They think it's all over. It is now. As England's World Cup hopes come to an end, so does the Glastonbury Festival for 2010. I'm Rosie Swash, and this is Music Weekly from Glastonbury. This year has been the festival's 40th anniversary. But before we blow out the candles on the cake, we'll be hearing from Sunday night's other stage headliners, Orbital, who returned to play the scene of their legendary set from 16 years ago. They'll be telling me about how that was the turning point for dance music at the festival and who they had as a special guest on stage last night. We'll be reviewing yesterday's lineup as well as the whole festival. And yes, we'll be in with the crowds to see what happened when football took over two fields here at Glastonbury. But you probably know how that ended. So you join us at Glastonbury for the last time this year. The empty beer cans and used takeaway containers are littering the backstage area here, and everyone has a bit of a sore head after yesterday's crushing England defeat. I'm here with Tim Jones.
Hello.
Hello. And Dorian Linsky.
Hello.
We'll be looking back at not just Sunday's lineup, but the whole of the festival later on. But quickly, which did you two choose yesterday afternoon, the football or slash on the pyramid stage?
I chose the football.
Did you?
Yes, surprisingly.
What a surprise.
Surprisingly.
Do you think, given the end result, slash might have been a better bet? Never the case?
I did enjoy it, actually, the football. It was still good to watch it with all those people. Good communal experience.
Dorian.
I was offered a choice between a punch in the face and slash, and I chose a punch in the face. No, I did actually see a little bit of slash while rushing to watch the football, and it was just like the least Glastonbury thing I've ever seen. It just seemed like some awful beamed in from Download or something.
Indeed, it was not very good. We're going to hear more about the football later on, but let's start off with the brothers Hartnell. It's Orbital. Dorian, you're a big Orbital fan. Is this true?
Yes.
And you've seen them at Glastonbury many times?
I did. Well, I saw them at my first ever Glastonbury in 1994, which was...
Their defining year.
Their defining year, and sort of dance music's defining year. This was pre-Chemical Brothers, Left Field, Underworld, making their mark. And it was kind of, everyone went, hey, two guys pressing buttons is amazing. And then I saw them again in 2002. And then 2004 was going to be their last ever gig. But, you know, nobody does last ever gigs now until they're in the ground. And so it pained me to miss them this time.
Well, I met up with Orbital just before their set yesterday, and I asked them what made their 1994 set so legendary.
It was one of those moments where people were just bursting for some sort of dance music at Glastonbury, and there hadn't been that much before. There'd been hints of it, there'd been The Shame and there'd been The Orb and things like that. But I think, if I think about it, I think we were the first sort of instrumental, sort of techno, electronic, sort of acid house, whatever you want to call it, band to play on one of the big stages late at night, and it just kicked off. I think that was the main crux of it, sort of bringing that kind of acid house, sort of, you know, mad rave vibe to Glastonbury.
Did you have any inkling beforehand, or was it something during the set you thought, this is something pretty special?
Not at all. I thought it was really special to us, you know what I mean? I didn't think everybody else was going to... I didn't think about that beyond. It was just getting beyond getting on stage and doing it, actually. It was the biggest fear. But no, it was. Oh yeah, we didn't know.
I think we felt like we were getting away with it, didn't we? It's like, oh, yeah. Look, we got away with it. We can do this. It's brilliant. And then you sort of see the crowd and it's like, oh my God, look at the size of that. Yeah, you know, it's brilliant.
It's like it's trying to sneak into the party that it shouldn't be at, and then getting in there and realising you've totally got the wrong clothes on and then you stick out like a sore thumb. But it wasn't like that at all, was it?
No, it wasn't, no.
No,
everybody likes your clothes.
Over the years since then, do you feel that the dance element of the festival has... I mean, it certainly feels as if it's expanded massively.
Well, totally. Well, it didn't even have a dance field when we did 94, did it?
No. And I was sort of worried that when they did the dance field, they were going to sort of ghettoise it and shove it all over to one corner and then not put it on the main stages. But that wasn't true at all, because they had us sort of playing before Pulp on the pyramid stage the year afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've done the sort of Jazz World stage by mistake once. We've done the other stage a couple more times, which is my favourite stage. Well, actually, you know, when you look at the whole thing, having been here for 6 years and seeing all the sort of new sort of sections, like the sort of Shangri-La bit, it's like sort of full-on, sort of mad, futuristic nightclubs sort of kicking off everywhere again, which is great, because it's sort of, in a way, what it used to be like in 1986 when I first came. There were sort of impromptu reggae sound systems and you know, sort of hip-hop things and all sorts of things going on all over the place, and it was great.
As two people that have been coming to Glastonbury for a while and also plays many times, are you of the mind that it's lost what it used to have?
No, I don't really. I think it's grown. I think it's certainly got a more sort of heavy-handed or you know, a more organised security kind of network. You know, the big ugly fence and all that kind of thing. But to be fair, if they didn't have that, it probably wouldn't still be here. They're sort of protecting their asset in the sense that if they don't, you know, well, they haven't got it, and it'll just fail one year. Do you know what I mean? These things, you know, I know there's a lot of money being made. There's a lot of money going into this, and it's a very sort of thin tightrope, probably, of whether it exists or doesn't. So, you know, they're obviously doing what they need to do. And to be fair, all the stewards, it's mad going up to the sort of Arcadia and Avalon bit yesterday. There were so many sort of people with megaphones going, stay to the left, go here, this bit's closed, and shutting things off, which on the one hand is irritating when you're drunk and wandering about Glastonbury, because it didn't used to be like that. It was totally sort of unlawful, unruly sort of madness. But then in 86, there weren't this many people. You sort of need that kind of thing to stop accidents happening, I guess.
Yeah, they've just got to conform really to the things, otherwise it won't go on. Look at the Glade. No, what was it called? The Glade, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, the festival that closed down. Yeah. Look at that. Do you know why that closed down? Because of the bloody... They've only, like, tripled the police. Mm. You know, you have to have a certain amount of police, and they've gone, right, OK, our bill from one year to the next has tripled.
Mm.
What's that all about? Too controlling, if you ask me. Put a law in there that you can't conform to, or you can't actually make it work on a business level, you know, which is ridiculous. State, you know, what can you do?
The thing is, though, with Glastonbury, it's still got that, it's still got so much effort being put into the sort of whole performance art and fantasy kind of thing. It's you know, it was so brilliant going up there. And the whole sort of spirit of the sort of things like the Mutoid Waste that used to turn up and do loads of mad stuff, I think some of them are still here now, you know, still doing stuff. And all of that, the whole kind of, you know, the sort of the Arcadia area and that kind of thing, it's just incredible. It's just brilliant. It's like almost whole film sets that sprung up and, you know, people acting out sort of mad stuff. And, you know, I think that's brilliant. I don't see that anywhere else in the world, any other festival that I've been to doesn't feel like this. It still has a uniqueness that I don't see anywhere else.
On paper, it seems to make total sense to have you guys against Stevie Wonder, on paper, although I've spoken to lots of people who feel very divided between coming to the two. If you weren't playing and you were at the festival, would you be going to see Stevie Wonder?
Totally. Totally.
Well, it depends who would be playing on the other stage, but I've seen Orbital a few times, so I'd definitely go and see Stevie Wonder.
You've got a surprise guest lined up.
Who told you? No, we've got Matt Smith coming on to introduce it. Matt Smith, the actor who plays Doctor Who. But he's coming on to introduce our final track, you know, which is we always traditionally end on the Doctor Who theme tune. So it's brilliant for us because we've always sort of said, oh, it'd be great to get Doctor Who on when you're doing it, and it finally happened.
He's so lovely. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm just making him come into our little arena at the end and just dance his arse off at me.
Join us in our TARDIS for a change, you know.
Yeah, I think he's the best Doctor. I really do.
Paul and Phil from Orbital there. Now, obviously, their set clashed last night with the closing headliner of Glastonbury Festival, Mr. Stevie Wonder. Dorian, you were there.
Mm.
Did it work for you? He did the hits, not too much noodling.
Well, that's it. I mean, sort of when he did the O2 gigs last year, I think, lots of people, myself included, came away just remembering him doing awful extended jams and introducing the band and getting them all to a little solo. And the thing is, he did play loads of hits, but if you talk to people who went to that O2 gig, they don't remember the hits. All they remember is in the middle. And he started this set like that was what was going to happen, and then just kind of got out of his system and went bam, bam, bam with the hits. So it sort of turned into this triumph, I think.
There was a moment after he'd come on with the extended keytar solo, which, you know, Stevie Wonder can get away with. I think it was Master Blaster that he introed, and he started trying to get the crowd to chant "God is good." Did you hear that bit?
Yeah.
Made me feel a little bit wobbly there, and he wasn't getting any sort of response in the crowd as far as I could tell.
It's a bit presumptuous to start getting the crowd to chant anything, let alone Christian propaganda, in your second song, after a keytar solo.
Tim, you watched the first half of Stevie Wonder, and then you went off to see Jackson Browne, which you said was very, very good.
I did. I much preferred it to Stevie Wonder, I have to say.
He was doing an acoustic set.
Yes, he was. There was lots of banter going on with him and his guitarist, David Lindley. They were making jokes. They did a cover of Love is Strange.
Oh.
And he was doing kind of Elvis vocals and then started singing in like a weird falsetto, this David Lindley. It was quite weird.
What I'd expect from a Jackson Browne gig at all.
But it was good. They had about 75 guitars lined up and they kept swapping guitars.
You also saw LCD Sound System yesterday.
Yes.
What did you think?
I thought it was good and people were dancing and everything, but I was comparing it to Hot Chip the whole way through.
Yeah.
And I think because they have the melodies and that kind of emotional, melancholic edge to it, it seemed to connect with a festival crowd a bit more than, you know, to me, that could have just been a DJ playing those records almost. I didn't get... And it was like you were saying, extended disco kind of...
10 minutes.
So.
Yeah, I think Hot Chip also. I've never personally seen them enjoy a performance as much as they did before, and that certainly helps. I did like it when James Murphy sang in various pitches that he could smell human poo, because it really did stink of feces, didn't it? The whole thing. Dorian, what else other than Stevie Wonder did you see that you particularly liked? Or
well, I saw LCD Sound System and loved them actually. I mean, I thought was astonishing, the sort of 10-minute long kind of thing that builds into this big acid rave meltdown bit, and that got me going. MGMT,
which you liked.
Oh. My ideal set list for them would kind of be about three songs. I mean, I do like the new record, but I like it to listen to at home. And there was a lot of kind of mellow psychedelia which wasn't really doing the do, and then they played Time to Pretend, and Andrew Van Weingarten said this used to be a very popular song back when we were a popular band, which I thought was quite sweet.
Yes.
I fell for him. But a total highlight of the day was Ray Davis.
Oh, really?
Who I've seen before and was so-so. And this time he dedicated a song to the Kinks bassist Pete Quaife, who died on Wednesday, which I hadn't even
heard
about.
Yeah, the obituaries just went up this weekend.
Yeah. And it was he brought on the Crouch End Festival chorus and did a choral version of See My Friends, which was unbelievably moving. And then later when he sang Days, kind of addressed to Pete Quaife as well, I burst into tears.
Oh, actually, everyone has a moment
tears.
Like that at Glastonbury, usually on a Sunday.
Yeah, normally.
It's hard.
It's all too much. It's the God only knows moment.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned earlier on that the football clashed with a number of sets here. Slashed on the Pyramid stage at the same time, Grizzly Bear on the other stage. There were two big screens set up at the festival to show the match if you wanted to see it, and quite a few people did, as Tim found out.
I'm in a very bizarre situation. I've become a football pundit. The mood is a bit mixed. It's a bit weird. We thought we were out of it after half an hour, and now we're back in it. But when you see a game with this many people and the crowd so loud, that nobody knew that the goal had been not been given for ages and ages. So we all thought we'd equalised with the Germans, so everyone was having a right party for a good 60 seconds until we realised that, yet again, we've been cheated.
Well, disappointed, really. We just didn't seem to want to play. We're not good enough. England aren't good enough to win the World Cup. We're all living in a dream if we think we are.
I think I was pretty much the only German today, and it's like all the people around me started like, boo, boo, and you're like, yeah, Lukas Podolski, go on. Yeah, no, it was good. It's a good experience. Got a couple of texts on my phone.
Well, I don't know what's more depressing, the fact that we've just lost 4-1 to Germany, or the fact that Jack Johnson's about to play the pyramid stage. Sunday night is not gearing up to be one of the best party nights Glastonbury's ever had. So basically the pressure really is on Stevie Wonder now. He's got to do better than that lot, surely.
Tim, you were there. What was the atmosphere like at the end of the match?
A lot of people had left
after the fourth goal.
Right. Some people left after the third goal. There wasn't much faith.
All those poor people that spent so long trying to find somewhere to actually watch the football, because I think they had quite a bit of a roadblock going on in the two fields that they'd set aside, and that was their reward.
They missed Slash. But
do you think it's had any sort of effect on, you know, Glastonbury ending on some kind of sour note?
I don't know. I spoke to quite a few people afterwards, and they all seemed to be a bit like, well, that's that over, but
brush it off.
Yeah, they seemed to all look really excited to see Stevie Wonder, to be honest.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a good time to bring us to what's been our favourite performance of the entire festival, because I fully expected it to be Stevie Wonder, and I did really enjoy it. I think it doesn't help that I was extremely tired and cold before he came on the Sunday, but he did rejuvenate me, and I think he did. He did all the hits, and he did it, and you know, the showmanship was brilliant. But it's not, I don't think it's the thing that I'm going to go away remembering what I liked most about this festival. And I think it's been quite a weird one for me, for bands, for example, having to go and interview people at Slash instead of the football to see who is actually there. So I've actually seen quite a few bands that I don't like. Dorian, what stands out for you?
Pet Shop Boys, who were the first band that I ever loved and responsible for.
And they're still
afterwards.
Good.
And it was the best set I've ever seen. I saw the first one about 20 years ago, and this was the best set I'd ever seen. It was just perfect. I was literally jumping with joy.
Tim, what got you jumping with joy this
week? Well, the Pet Shop Boys as well was really good. I think the thing is with them, when they play a big monster hit, you don't think that's it, or that's nearly most of the good bits over. You just can be very confident that they're going to play loads and loads more. It's not like you think, oh, they've played Heart, time to bugger off. It's like, you know, they're going to just keep playing more and more, so that was great. And Hot Chip, as I've said, was also equally brilliant.
Has it gone down in either of your books as a vintage Glastonbury as one of the best? I mean, we know that it's only a matter of time. If he's not said
he's
it already,
said it. Mike, he's already said it.
William, he'll take bets on when Michael Eavis is going to say this is the best.
I just like him to go, it's the second best Glastonbury ever.
Yeah.
just have a favourite and stick with that.
Well, he'll surely, when he looks back on it, if he did an interview and they said, look, well, which is your favourite year, he'd pick a year. He wouldn't always go for the last year.
Do you think
he said it was the best year ever, when people were like floating down the river, stuck in the car park for 8 hours?
Maybe this year really will be the best year ever, because he performed on the main stage with Stevie Wonder in a very painful,
as my wife pointed out, he was very much like Steve Martin at the beginning of The Jerk with his adoptive black family. dancing, but incredibly out of place, but endearing.
And, you know, maybe not the best set of lungs I've ever heard. It was quite, but it was passionate.
I think I left at the right time, didn't I?
Yeah, exactly.
He did deserve it.
He deserved to be on there and singing along with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really kind of, you know, great sort of sentimental moment.
You won't be saying that next year when he decides to headline himself at the festival, because it went down so well.
With his band, Michael Eavis, his heavy sound.
Yeah. The other news story is, obviously they haven't revealed it, but they've said that they already know, they've already booked up all of next year's headliners. Do we have any inclinations to who it might be? Could it be Florence and the Machine? You never know.
It's madness. I've got a feeling, I don't know about the logistics, but I do think that if there was any chance at all that U2 should come back
and
do
I think
it,
that's
because
a big...
I've never missed U2 so much in my life as I did
when watching the Gorillaz.
With Gorillaz, and you know, I do love Gorillaz, but we discussed why, you know, that set didn't really work. And I just thought, man, oh man, if U2 were on now, just playing like global pop smash after another, and I think Bono, you know, was obviously really gutted, and I think that would be,
you know, just a great bet next year.
Also, he's got to have a platform to show off the special song that he wrote just for Glastonbury Festival, which otherwise we wouldn't be hearing.
We all need to hear that.
We all need to hear that.
Do you think that the festival might have been lacking a kind of unifying moment that everyone talks about? Because, I mean, no, even though I loved Hot Chip and you love Pet Shop Boys, I don't feel like the whole festival is going to be talking about that event.
As in, they were with Jay-Z or...?
Yeah, with Jay-Z or Paul McCartney or, you know, those sort of things. Do you think Stevie Wonder was that, or do you think that's just the one thing the festival was maybe slightly missing?
I think I agree with Dorian in the sense that it probably did miss U2. I think it would have set the tone of the weekend in a completely different way. And I'm not a huge fan of U2, but I think it would have been an absolutely fantastic spectacle, and it would have set things up completely differently. So yeah, maybe it did. What do you think, Dorian? Lacked a unifying.
Yeah, but then in a sense, there were so many great sort of scattered moments that you could have, you know, at the same time, pretty much. You could have Stevie Wonder doing Happy Birthday with Michael Eavis and Orbital with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know, two sort of amazing moments. You know, Edge doing Where the Streets Have No Name with Muse. There seemed to be kind of a few rather than that kind of Radiohead in 97 where you'd think like nobody else played the way people talk about it. But that's fine. You know, if I've got like five or six highlights rather than one, that's all right with me.
Well, that's all for Glastonbury's 40th anniversary then. All that's left to do is apply a bit of aftersun and pick up our party bag on the way out. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Tim and Dorian for staying here right till the very end. Remember, you can still catch all this weekend's shows from Glastonbury with our interviews with Gorillaz, Scissor Sisters, Kelly Okereke and Tiny Temper at guardian.co.uk/Glastonbury. There's reviews, pictures and videos there too, so if you're listening on your way home now, then check it all out when you get back there. Music Weekly is now officially on its summer holidays and we'll be back on July 30th. I'm Rosie Swash. The producer was Scott Crawley. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.